This is Kathy coming to you on Monday, January the 12th, with the first half of the Pantograph from Bloomington Normal. The headline today reads, Ready to Sell, See Leadership. The annual cookie rally sets the stage for the spring sale season. It's nearly the halfway point of January already, and that means Girl Scouts cookie season is just on the horizon for nearly 10,000 scouts across central Illinois. To that end, the Girl Scouts of Central Illinois hosted the annual cookie rally on Saturday at the Interstate Center, where scouts and families learned valuable skills on how to sell cookies, as well as enjoyed camp activities, a bounce house, magic shows, and even created new friends with Build-A-Bear Workshop. I love that my daughter has a chance to be involved in a troop with her friends, see the leadership of the women or the other girls, said Christy Martin. Her 9-year-old daughter, Molly, troop 1925 in Normal, had just finished putting the stuffing inside a penguin she named Frosty. They have a lot of fun in terms of activities. Just having this event in general for all the girls to come together is meaningful, Martin said. More than just cookies. Girl Scouts of the USA was founded in 1912 and has been selling cookies since the 1920s, said Jennifer Sedbrook, CEO of Girl Scouts of Central Illinois, who oversees 38 counties of scout troops. The cookie program is the largest girl-led entrepreneurial program in the world, so selling cookies isn't just about selling cookies, it's about learning a variety of skills, Sedbrook said. The main goal of the cookie rally, while filled with fun activities, is to prepare scouts on the business of cookies, she said. We have the Cookie University, and that's where girls learn a lot of the skills they need to sell cookies. Marketing skills and business ethics and customer service and goal setting, Sedbrook said. That's really important. So we have a lot of activities related to that, and they need to know the product they are selling. Volunteers and GSCI employees were stationed throughout the Interstate Center, teaching scouts and families about the 9 different cookies, how to inventory the cookies, what rewards were available, and how to set realistic goals and how to make correct change for purchases, all necessary skills for the young entrepreneurs. All those things are really important to being a leader and to growing into a really strong person, Sedbrook said. So the Girl Scouts cookie program is just key to all of that. Parents like Jackie Kaiser of Gridley said they appreciate the opportunity for their children to gain valuable skills like learning how to count money back and socialize with adults with an adult present, she said. Last year, her 8-year-old Grace Lynn sold 550 boxes of cookies for Troop 4061 in Gridley. The cookie season begins on February 13th and runs through March 29th, she said. Proceeds from the sales are split between the GSCI Council, which oversees 38 councils and nearly 10,000 scouts, and the individual troops, with the remainder going to cookie production. About 1/5 of the proceeds return to the troops for cookie program rewards, ranging from charms, scout patches, and gift cards all the way to trips to Universal Studios or abroad, Sedbrook said. We just had a troop this past summer go to Japan, she said. We have one going to Savannah, Georgia next summer and in a couple of years to Paris. And so Girl Scouts is really about being able to earn your own money and do the things you want. New flavors, new fun. The 9 cookie flavors this year include a wide variety from the classic thin mint to brownie-inspired adventurefuls. New for 2026 is the Explorer Morris cookie, said Kelly Day, president of the Decatur Service Center of the GSCI. It's a chocolate cookie with a rocky road filling inside it, she said. It's absolutely delicious. The girls are excited about it. The adults are excited about it. I think it'll really be a top seller for our council. Girl Scouts and the cookie program especially give young people an opportunity to grow their social skills, said Melody Wilcock of Pekin. It gets them out of their comfort zone, Wilcock said. It gets us out of the house, gets us to meet new people and try new things. It's just a lot of fun, honestly, and it's a nice break from all the other chaos of the world. Wilcock's oldest daughter was helping with the Build-A-Bear station while her youngest 10-year-old Talia was shooting at the archery range. We get to go on a lot of camping trips, and we get to do a lot of fun things, Talia said. I think that's the coolest part of Girl Scouts. This and the horseback riding is really cool. Scout Camp is one of the rewards available for the cookie program. But the program is about more than just the reward, she said. I like selling the cookies, too, Talia said, because you get to meet a lot of new people, and you get to try the new cookies. For more information on the Girl Scout cookie program and to find a local troop, visit getyourgirlpower.org/en/cookies.html. And in world news on the front page, activists, 538 dead in Iran protests. Trump looks to help as Iran parliament chief targets U.S. military, by John Gambrell. Dubai. The death toll and the crackdown on nationwide protests in Iran spiked Sunday to at least 538 people, activists said. Over 10,600 people were detained, said the U.S.-based human rights activists news agency. Of those killed, 490 were protesters and 48 were members of the security forces, it said, warning that the toll is likely to rise. With the internet down in Iran and phone lines cut off, gauging the demonstrations from abroad has grown more difficult. The activist group, which relies on activists in Iran cross-checking information, has offered accurate tolls in previous rounds of unrest in the Islamic Republic. The Iranian government did not offer overall casualty figures for the demonstrations. The Associated Press was unable to independently assess the toll, given that internet and international phone calls are now being blocked in Iran. Also on Sunday, Iran's parliament speaker warned that the U.S. military and Israel would be legitimate targets if the U.S. strikes the Islamic Republic over the ongoing protests, as threatened by President Donald Trump. Mohammed Baghir Ghalibaf made the threat after nationwide protests challenging Iran's theocracy saw protesters flood the streets in the country's capital and its second-largest city into Sunday morning, crossing the two-week mark. With the internet going down in Iran and phone lines cut off, gauging the demonstrations from abroad has grown more difficult. Those abroad fear the information blackout is emboldening hardliners within Iran's security services to launch a bloody crackdown. Trump offered support for the protesters, saying on social media that Iran is looking at freedom, perhaps like never before. The USA stands ready to help. The New York Times and Wall Street Journal, citing anonymous U.S. officials, said Saturday night that Trump was given military options for a strike on Iran, but hadn't made a final decision. Iranian state television broadcast the parliament session live. Ghalibaf, a hardliner who has run for the presidency in the past, gave a speech applauding peace in Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard, particularly its all-volunteer Basij, for having stood firm during the protests. He went on to directly threaten Israel, the occupied territory as he referred to it, and the U.S. military, possibly with a preemptive strike. In the event of an attack on Iran, both the occupied territory and all American military centers, bases, and ships in the region will be our legitimate targets, Ghalibaf said. We do not consider ourselves limited to reacting after the action and will act based on any objective signs of a threat. Lawmakers rushed the dais in Iranian parliament shouting, "Death to America!" It remains unclear just how serious Iran is about launching a strike, particularly after its air defenses were destroyed during the 12-day war in June with Israel. Any decision to go to war would rest with Iran's 86-year-old Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The U.S. military has said that the Mideast is postured with forces that span the full range of combat capability to defend our forces, our partners and allies, and U.S. interests. Iran targeted U.S. forces at El Udeid Air Base in Qatar in June, while the U.S. Navy's Mideast Base 5th Fleet is stationed in the island kingdom of Bahrain. Israel, meanwhile, is watching closely the situation between the U.S. and Iran, said an Israeli official who spoke on condition of anonymity due to not being authorized to speak to journalists. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke with the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio overnight on topics including Iran, the official added. The people of Israel, the entire world, are in awe of the tremendous heroism of the citizens of Iran, said Netanyahu, a longtime Iran hawk. At the Vatican, Pope Leo XIV mentioned Iran as a place where ongoing tensions continue to claim many lives. I hope and pray that dialogue and peace may be patiently nurtured in pursuit of the common good of the whole of the society, he said. Online videos sent out of Iran, likely using Starlink satellite transmitters, purportedly show demonstrators gathering in northern Tehran's Punak neighborhood. There, it appeared, authorities shut off streets with protesters waving their lit mobile phones. Others banged metal while fireworks went off. The pattern of protests in the capital has largely taken the form of scattered, short-lived, and fluid gatherings, an approach shaped in response to the heavy presence of security forces and increased field pressure, the human rights activists' news agency said. Reports were received of surveillance drones flying overhead and movements by security forces around protest locations, indicating ongoing monitoring and security control. In Mashhad, Iran's second-largest city, 450 miles northeast of Tehran, footage purported to show protesters confronting security forces. Protests also appeared to happen in Kerman, 500 miles southeast of Tehran. Iranian state television on Sunday morning had their correspondents appear on the streets in several cities to show calm areas with a date stamp shown on the screen. Tehran and Mashhad were not included. Government rhetoric also ratcheted up Sunday. Ali Larjani, a top security official, accused some demonstrators of killing people or burning some people, which is very similar to what ISIS does, referring to the Islamic State group by an acronym. State TV aired funerals of slain security force members while reporting another six were killed in Kermanshah. In Fars province, violence killed 13 people and seven security forces were killed in the North Khorasan province, it added. It also showed a pickup truck full of bodies and body bags and later a morgue. Even Iran's reformist President Masoud Pezeshkian, who has been trying to ease the anger before the demonstrations exploded in recent days, offered a hardening tone in an interview aired Sunday. "People have concerns. We should sit with them, and if it is our duty, we should resolve their concerns," Pezeshkian said. But the higher duty is not to allow a group of rioters to come and destroy the entire society. Iran's exiled Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi asked in his latest message for demonstrators to take to the streets Sunday. Demonstrators have shouted in support of the Shah in some protests, but it isn't clear whether that's support for Pahlavi himself or a desire to return to a time before the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Pahlavi's support of and from Israel has drawn criticism in the past, particularly after the 12-day war. The demonstrations began December 28th over the collapse of the Iranian rial currency, which trades at over $1.4 million to a dollar, as the country's economy is squeezed by the international sanctions, in part levied over its nuclear program. The protests intensified and grew into calls directly challenging Iran's theocracy. In this headline, Restraining Order Thaws Funding Freeze on Child Care by Nicole Hytrek and Jerry Nowicki. Illinois and four other Democratic-led states that were subject to the Trump administration's freeze on $10 billion in federal funding for child care and family services secured a restraining order on Friday in their lawsuit seeking to block the move. The restraining order, issued by Judge Arun Subramanian in the Southern District of New York, means the freeze can't take effect while the full case plays out unless an appellate court overturns the stay. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul called the freeze, which includes about $1 million for child care programs in Illinois, callous, and stressed that it targeted only Democratic-led states. "There is no justification for this attempted funding freeze," Raoul said in a statement praising the order. "It's cruel and illegal attempt by the Trump administration to play politics with the lives of children and low-income families." The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced late Tuesday that it was freezing the distribution of funds for Illinois, California, Colorado, Minnesota, and New York because of concerns about fraud, although it didn't provide evidence or cite specific claims. The department called for those states to submit additional documentation in 2 weeks in order to receive the money. Raoul joined his counterparts from the four other states in filing this suit Thursday against HHS and its Secretary Robert Kennedy Jr. Congress enacted this critical funding to support families and help working parents access child care, and the president does not have the authority to withhold it in this way, Raoul said in a Thursday statement. The 41-page lawsuit asked the court to immediately stop the freeze and order the release of funds. The lawsuit accuses the administration of targeting Democratic states for political reasons, documenting several statements from President Donald Trump going back to December that specifically mention Illinois, California, Minnesota, and New York. The statements include vague claims about fraud and attacks on respective governors. At a Friday news conference, all five attorneys general said the administration did not offer any evidence or specific allegations of fraud in the letters they received. If the president was serious about rooting out fraud, his administration would be investing more resources in partnering with states and supporting states' efforts to root out fraud and abuse, Rollo said. But the real motivation behind this action is to punish Democrat-led states like Illinois that are disfavored by the Trump administration. The news release from HHS stated the funds will remain frozen until HHS's Children and Family Services Division reviews documents requested from the states and finds they are following federal requirements. Families who rely on child care and family assistance programs deserve confidence that these resources are used lawfully and for their intended purpose, said Deputy Secretary Jim O'Neill. This action reflects our commitment to program integrity, fiscal responsibility, and compliance with federal requirements. Governor J.B. Pritzker released a statement Tuesday emphasizing that Illinois already has anti-fraud policies and reporting requirements for programs like this. Raul said the same thing on Friday. We, on the local level, regularly partner with federal agencies investigating fraud and abuse to investigate and prosecute on a case-by-case basis, Raul said. This approach of, without any specific evidence, threatening to freeze funds is inconsistent with what we do on a normal basis to make sure that funds are appropriately being administered. The freeze impacts three programs, the Child Care and Development Fund, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families or TANF, and the Social Services Block Grant Program. Those programs fund several Illinois programs that serve hundreds of thousands of Illinoisans. Raul said he can't provide an exact date for when federal funds Illinois has already received might run out, only saying the date is fairly imminent. The lawsuit also claims that 2-week deadline to submit documents is unreasonable, and many of the requested documents involve individual sensitive personal information. And on the local level, Energy Illinois, NICOR seeks a $221 million gas rate hike. ICC okayed the last increase less than 2 months ago by Maggie Doherty. NICOR Gas on Friday filed a $221 million rate hike request with the Illinois Commerce Commission, less than 2 months after state regulators approved a $168 million rate hike for the utility. The company estimates that the increase, if approved in full, will add less than $6 to monthly gas bills for typical residential customers, or 6.7% annually starting in 2027. NICOR distributes natural gas to around 2.3 million customers in Illinois. Consumer advocates expressed outrage with the move, calling on state regulators to reject the request, which comes only days after the Peoples Gas filed for a $202 million rate hike on Monday. I am shocked that NICOR is proposing to raise rates again just 1 month after imposing its last rate hike, Illinois PIRG Director Abe Scar wrote in a statement. NICOR is busting its customers' household budgets because it apparently refuses to live within its own. Illinois PIRG is a consumer advocacy group that often challenges rate requests by Illinois energy utilities. If approved in full by the ICC, NICOR's request will have an increase by about 170% in the last decade, according to PIRG, an increase it says is significantly higher than the state's other major gas and electric utilities. NICOR said in a statement that the investment is needed to enhance the reliability of its natural gas distribution system, particularly through extreme weather, and to remain in compliance with state and federal regulations. That includes replacing aging equipment, inspecting and repairing over 400 miles of transmission pipelines, and safety-related replacement of over 45 miles of distribution lines, according to the company. Consumer groups challenge the assertion that these investments are necessary now, saying the company has tripled its infrastructure spending over the past decade, and that NICOR has already replaced its old iron pipes that were at a high risk of failure. Gas utilities deliver natural gas to consumers at market rates and make money on the delivery of the gas, not on the gas itself. This, consumer groups argue, incentivizes overly aggressive spending on infrastructure projects related to gas delivery. An analysis by the Future of Heat Initiative, an independent nonprofit that makes recommendations on utilities policy, found that gas delivery charges now make up 65% of customers' gas bills in Illinois, up from 36% in 1984. The conclusion the report finds is that the customers pay more for pipes and the delivery of gas than for the gas itself. The filing will undergo an 11-month review period by the ICC, giving consumer groups the chance to intervene and formally challenge spending requests. If allowed by the ICC, the rate hike would go into effect next January. If NICOR is granted this $221 million increase, it would push the utility's total rate increases to more than $1 billion in less than a decade, said Sarah Moskowitz, executive director of the Citizens Utility Board, a utility watchdog group created by the Illinois legislature. CUB will challenge NICOR's money grab, and we call on state regulators to crack down on the company, she added. We are deeply concerned that the sixth rate hike will push even more gas customers into hardship. Other state news, bill targets child videos. Proposal could okay lawsuits for filming without consent. An Illinois House member has filed a bill that would form an act protecting children from being video recorded without parental or guardian consent. It's being called the Civil Remedies for Non-Consensual Recording of Children Act, and it would regulate the use of video for a variety of purposes, including live feeds. For now, the bill is legally known as Illinois House Bill 4262. Creates a civil action for a child or the parent or legal guardian on behalf of a child if a person makes a video record or transmits a live video of the child without consent of the child's parent or guardian in a restroom, tanning bed, tanning salon, locker room, changing room, or hotel residence, or makes a video record or transmits a live video of a child without the consent of the child's parent or guardian in a residence in which the child does not reside, the synopsis of the proposed act reads. The act was filed by Democratic Illinois State Representative Curtis Tarver II. He represents the state of Illinois' 25th congressional district, which mostly runs along a large portion of the Lake Michigan lakeshore south of Chicago. The bill language also notes it provides for exceptions, and some of those exceptions include a video record made in good faith by law, a video record made in good faith for medical education or treatment, a video record made in good faith in the reporting of unlawful conduct. Violation of the act is per se harmful, the bill details indicate. A child who proves by preponderance of the evidence, which means the child proves their claim is true, that a defendant violated this act against the child is considered obviously and materially harmful to the child and is deemed to be per se harmful and traumatic. A child does not need to present additional evidence to prove the child was harmed, but the child may present additional evidence to show the extent of the harm. Nothing in this section may be construed to state that a child discovered the cause of action at any particular time, or that a child realized that the child's damages were related to the violation of this act at any particular time. Violations of the act do not indicate any type of jail or prison time, but instead the defendant in an applicable case will be responsible for statutory damages not to exceed $10,000 against each defendant found liable under this act. Violations of the act may also include punitive damages and reasonable attorney's fees and costs to the prevailing plaintiff. In the In Brief section, Daiso store plans grand opening in Normal. Daiso, a Japanese value store, will hold a grand opening event January 24th and 25th in Normal. The store is in the College Plaza at 1700 East College Avenue, Suite 4. Daiso offers affordable items such as household and beauty products, stationery, and snacks. The store will be giving away an exclusive Illinois tote bag to the first 100 customers each day who make a $20 purchase at the Normal location. There also will be coupon offers all weekend long while supplies last. Doors will open at 9 a.m. Saturday, January 24th, and at 10 a.m. Sunday, January 25th. Regular store hours will be 9 to 9 Monday through Saturday and 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Sunday. You can visit diasous.com/pages/about-us for more information. Woodford County Plat Books now on sale. Woodford County Plat Books for 2026 are now available for purchase through the Woodford County Soil and Water Conservation District. Plat Books, which are official maps of the region showing boundaries and lot lines in the count based on the public land survey system, can be purchased for $30 cash or check at the Conservation District's office located at 937 West Center Street in Eureka or online at woodfordcountywcd.com. Customers can also have their books mailed for a shipping fee of $3.56. Questions should be directed to the Conservation District's office at 309-467-2308, extension 3. Conservation District election on January 27th. The Woodford County Soil and Water Conservation District will hold elections for directors on Tuesday, January the 27th. Voters in the county can cast their ballot from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. that day at the Conservation District's office at 937 West Center Street in Eureka. Absentee voting will begin Tuesday, January the 13th. Three directors will be elected to serve the district for a two-year term, according to a news release from the organization. Questions should be directed to the Conservation District at 309 467-2308, extension 3. Warning labels sought for some gas appliances by Dominic Gennetti. A bill proposed by Democratic Illinois State Representative Michael Crawford would prohibit a non-externally vented natural gas appliance from being sold or offered for sale without a properly placed warning label. The requirement would apply to appliances manufactured on or after January 1, 2027. Crawford represents the state's 31st House District, located south of Chicago and northeast of Naperville. The bill would amend the Consumer Fraud and Deceptive Business Practices Act. The label required shall be attached to the gas appliance in a conspicuous location. The label must be in a type size no smaller than the largest type size used for other consumer information on the product, the language of the Illinois House Bill 4272 reads. Additionally, the bill stipulates that the Illinois Attorney General may adopt rules setting forth additional requirements for the placement and formatting of the label. Some appliances the bill would impact include gas stoves, ovens and ranges, vent-free gas heaters, and similar appliances such as vent-free gas fireplaces and mounted or installed gas wall heaters. An example of a possible label reads, "Warning, gas appliances can release nitrogen dioxide and carbon monoxide inside homes at levels exceeding the Environmental Protection Agency's standards for outdoor air quality. The presence of these pollutants may exacerbate pre-existing respiratory illnesses or lead to the development of asthma, especially in children. Gas appliances should never be used without a ducted vent hood to reduce exposure to these emissions." And a little bit of information on gardening to lighten up the day. Embrace the Limelight by Norman Winter. Once New Year's Day has passed, gardeners start to get excited about new plants and ideas for the landscape and garden. One plant that the garden guy wants to put in your mind is proven winner's landscape shrub of the year, Limelight Prime Hydrangea Paniculata. This year's Pantone color of the year is Cloud Dancer, and as the name suggests, it's a cumulus cloud white, which Limelight Prime may fit perfectly for the garden. Limelight Prime is considered a new generation of the much-loved and award-winning Limelight. The difference is that it blooms earlier, which is important for colder areas, its branches are sturdier, and flowers are brighter. It is also a perfect size for the landscape, reaching 4 to 6 feet in height and 4 to 6 feet wide. In my area, it seems mostly of the hydrangea paniculata plants are grown as a hedge, maybe a cluster of 3 to 5 where they can be seen by all who pass by, but they are largely panicles without partners. While the gardening guy is largely joking, I want everyone to think about planting panicle pals or combinations for your Limelight Prime hydrangeas. It seems to me that no matter what type of planting you are going to do, Limelight Prime simply makes every style of garden better. In the South, we have a lot of gardeners who like to plant a cutting garden. Let me remind you that 19 years ago, Limelight, the granddaddy, was selected as the Cut Flower of the Year for 2007. This award was courtesy of the American Specialty Cut Flower Association. It stands to reason that if Limelight won the award, then Limelight Prime would be its equal and deserve a prominent place in the garden. Light Prime is recommended over a huge air geographically zones 3 through 9. Despite this, I could not wait to try it with tropicals when I got mine in 2021. I planted it with a red Abyssinian banana and a Portora elephant ears. You would have trouble convincing the neighbors that Limelight was not an exotic tropical. Every year since then, I have exchanged the bed just to see the looks perform. Sunstar Red Pentas is another flirt with tropical, and of course the red star-shaped flowers were a perfect match for the large white panicles. I crave pollinators, particularly butterflies and hummingbirds, so some of my favorite partners with the Limelight Prime are Rock and Play in the Blue Salvia, Meant to Be Queen Nectarine, and Royal Raspberry Agastache. I've been adding shrubs like Miss Molly Butterfly Bush on each end of the bed, and more perennials like Augusta Lavender Heliotrope, Serendipity, Ornamental Allium, and Luminary Phlox varieties Prismatic Pink and Ultraviolet. And that's all we have time for today for part one of the Pantograph. Please stay tuned. I'll be right back with part two.